Davey, how you doing?
It's raining again here, Jason.
We got to make a trade. Yeah. I don't need to retain anything. I don't need salary retention. Just straight up a little bit of sun for a little bit of moisture straight across, because we've had a lot of sun.
We need trading some moisture. Season, I think there's something there to be had, and it's aggravating because it was sunny up until like 5 minutes ago, and as soon as you get on the line, it's raining. So I don't know what the heck's happening here.
Oh well, it's just, if I was the rain whisperer, I would be doing it right here. So I can't say that I am. Unfortunately, lots going on. Dave, when I talked to you on Sunday, and I said, hey, I can't wait for now that the cup is over. There's going to be lots going on. Well, we see a Duncan Keith trade, and then today, the Minnesota Wild, on the DFO rundown, we had Mike Russo on last week, and we talked about Parise. And at the end, I said, you know what? Like, Ryan Suter, we thought, you know what? Like, at least get him to waive his no movement clause to protect, so they could protect Matt Dumba. Well, I don't know. Maybe he said no to that. I have no idea. But now they both get bought out. What do you think?
Well, it's, shall we say, a bold move by Billy Guerin. Not so much in the first couple of years, but in the subsequent years of the deal. I think year three, they'll have a collective amount of $13 million in dead money, and then in year four, $15 million in dead money. And you hope by that point the cap has started to go up a little bit. But, man, even if it goes up, like what is our best-case scenario here 4 years from now, that the cap is maybe at $90 million, is that too extensive a climb over 4 years? About $9 million, could it go up more? I can't imagine going up that much more. That is still a huge portion of dead money on your cap. I get what it does in the short term in terms of helping them allow themselves to protect Matt Dumba, freeze up some salary cap space to get Kirill Kaprizov done. In the meantime, but man, 3 and 4 years from now, that is going to be one significant cap hit of dead money, and I just don't know how you win with that much dead money on your books.
It's going to be a massive challenge, right? And like, it's funny that it frees up cap space to sign Kaprizov, but at the same time, I think it lessens the chance of Kaprizov signing long term, because him and his agent are like, hey, wait a sec, we got a lot of dead cap space.
Kind of screams 2 year deal, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, well, because, I do know this. Minnesota has offered Kaprizov. They wanted to go long term, and they're willing to pay him more than any Minnesota player in franchise history. So, you know, that minimum, that's an $8 million cap hit for a guy who's played one season in the league. Like, man, that's pretty ballsy of him to just turn that down.
It is. I mean, in that case, I mean, what is he looking for? Because that would be what, if they're going to go 8 years, that's around $64 million. It's a pretty nice contract, although I guess he feels that he could be at the level of, say, an Artemi Panarin, who had a, I guess, similar trajectory to the NHL, and now he's making up around 11 and change, maybe if not a little bit more than that. But that's quite a contract to turn down. But like I said, if that's going to be the case, if they're going to have that much dead money on the books, kind of screams like 2 year deal for Kaprizov, and then try and bet on himself again if he wants to be up around the $11-12 million range at some point.
Well, you know, and good for him if he thinks he will. But to be up to that range, like you got to do a lot more than just score goals, right?
Yep.
It's hard to be a big time goal scorer and a playmaker, right? Like it's difficult. So, well, good for him if he thinks he will, but I don't, man, that would be a tough ask. Cause you know, like hey, it's his first year. So that's obviously great. You know, he's 24 years of age now. So at 23, he had 51 points in 55 games. Awesome. But is he going to make that much of a jump? I got to see it to believe it.
I'm with you on that, but say he puts up another season next year, similar to what he did this year, and then a year from now he goes from, you know, because he probably would have been around 75 points. Say he goes to 85 points the season after this. He's in a pretty good bargaining position, and quite honestly, I would be a little bit surprised if he's not up around 80 points each of these 2 years. Would you not be?
Yeah, and 80 points is great, but 80 points to me doesn't make you suddenly a $10 or $11 million player, right?
True.
Like
true.
I know that Toronto did it with Mitch Marner, but yeah. I don't necessarily think that was the best.
No, I don't think it was either. But, you know, put it this way, he also might have Minnesota between a bit of a rock and a hard place because they clearly need more of his types of players than less. I mean, when I talked to Billy Garrett on the brunch, maybe a month or so into the season, one of the things he said, and I was actually really shocked that he came out and said it out loud, was that, look, we recognize the fact that we have been a boring franchise in this league for some time, and we are actively trying to shed that reputation. So, I mean, he's not wrong. I'm just shocked that he said that. But he's right. So Kaprizov is the type of guy, as he said to me that day, you put him out on the ice, you put him over the boards, he has an opportunity to make something happen and bring you out of your seat each time that he is on the ice, which, again, I agree with. So, you know, 2 years from now, if he puts up another two good seasons, he's in a pretty good bargaining position. That's all I'll say. But I would not have had the stones to buy out Suter and Parise and know that I would have that amount of dead money on my books 3 and 4 years from now.
Dave McCarthy from SiriusXM joins us. Dave, Pekka Rinne retires from the Nashville Predators. Do you think he's a Hall of Famer?
Oh, he's going to be right on that line. I mean, he's won a Vezina, went to the finals. What has he done internationally? I think he's got, does he have a silver medal with Finland at the Olympics? I'm trying to remember off the top of my head. Were they 06?
Yeah.
Wasn't it Sweden beating Finland in the gold medal game? And I think he was the goalie on that team, was he not?
Mm-hmm.
So, I wouldn't say a first ballot, no. I think he'll be in that sort of Curtis Joseph range where you can make a legitimate case. But I think the timing might have to be right for him to find his way into the Hall of Fame. I don't think he's a first ballot, but if the timing is right, there might be a case there to be made.
All right. Yeah.
What do you think?
I think he was good. I'm not sure he's that much better than Curtis Joseph. Right? Like I know that Joseph
I think
did,
he's,
didn't
yeah,
didn't
I think
win
he's
a
right
Vezina.
In that range.
Yeah, so I think he'll probably he'll be up. He'll be a guy you talk about for many years, 20 years from now. Hey, maybe Pekka Rinne could get in. That's kind of where I see him.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think he's – and I'll put it this way. I'm not sure if Curtis Joseph's going to get in, right? I mean, it's going to have to be perfect timing for him as well in a lean year where otherwise there are not too many candidates that jump off the page, and then maybe he gets some votes. But I'm not sure. Like, I wouldn't be willing to bet a great deal of money that Cujo ever ends up in the Hall of Fame, which is to say that's where I kind of feel about Pekka Rinne as well. He might get in, but to say he's in the same range as Cujo is not me suggesting that, yeah, I think he'll eventually get in. It's me saying that he'll have to sort of get lucky to an extent to get in, but you can make a case maybe, but I can also totally understand if the voting committee does not feel strongly enough that he's worthy to be in the Hall of Fame.
You know, it's funny, Dave. I looked it up. 2014 and 10, Finland got a bronze. 2006, they got a silver. He wasn't on any of those teams.
He wasn't.
So he had to be injured. He had to be injured at some point. I'm trying to look through, you know, like the 2010 season. And no, he wasn't there. Even 2014, it had a really kind of had a meh year that season. So he might have been banged up. I think he was banged up, actually, in 2014. So that's why he didn't go.
Yeah.
But never technically got one of those
further,
medals.
That even further weakens the argument then, to be honest with you.
What is your thoughts on the Duncan Keith deal?
I like it. I mean, I really do. I know the cap space is something that's rankling some people in Edmonton right now. I get that, but they needed an upgrade on the back end. And Duncan Keith is not a first-pairing D-man anymore at all, but I still strongly believe that he's a guy that can help Edmonton in a variety of different ways if used appropriately. He's got championship pedigree, and that does mean something. And Edmonton really has not had any example of that at all under this sort of iteration of the group. And I think they're in desperate need of it. I think that's one of the reasons why, come playoff time, they continually find ways to not get it done. Like, as good as some of the players are on that team, there are other players that just don't. One, they need to improve up the roster as well. But they also have to understand, McDavid and Draisaitl as well, how to change their game a little bit at times when need be, to be more productive in the playoffs. And I think Duncan Keith can bring some of that experience and some of that savvy to that roster. It's not a huge onerous commitment. It's only 2 years. So I don't think it's something that's going to really cripple the team from a cap standpoint. There's still some money for Kenny Holland to go out and work with moving forward. And they were able to get a guy like that without really giving up anything that in terms of assets. And quite frankly, they don't have a lot of assets that you'd be wanting to give up at this point. So I really don't have a problem with that deal. I think it satisfies the need. I think you'll be able to help on the ice. And they don't further weaken the roster to any great extent. Caleb Jones, to me, is going to be a five, you hear the thunder, 5-6-7 type of defenseman, if he's anything in his NHL career. So I'm okay with the deal. I really am.
When you look at, you know, we're coming up, teams have to submit their protection list by Saturday afternoon, and then the protection list will be made public on Sunday. Then the draft will happen next Wednesday, the 21st. Then we got the draft on the 23rd, and then you got free agency. I think there's going to be a few pending free agents signed between the 22nd and the 27th. A guy like Alex Ovechkin. I could see a guy like Gabriel Landeskog. And I think a guy like Jamie Oleksiak. Like, Jamie Oleksiak would be highly sought after. I just think Dallas really wants him. They're going to pay him. And he'll stick there. Or do you think he tests the market?
It's interesting. I think he's in a really good position right now because I don't know if there's going to be a time where he might be able to command more money than at this point in his career. Like, I think this is his opportunity to really make some hay. Unfortunately, it's coming for him in a flat cap year. I wouldn't be surprised, though, if he at least goes to market to entertain some offers, see what the marketplace dictates. And if it's significantly more than Dallas is offering, I mean, you'd be foolish not to look into those offers a little bit more, or at least go to Dallas, and not to try to, you know, put Jim Neal to the screws, but say, hey, look, this is what I'm getting elsewhere. Like, I'd really like to stay, but is there anything we can do? If the answer is yes, great. If no, then... I mean, you'd be foolish not to try to maximize that opportunity at this point in his career if you're him. Because I think he's really – his career trajectory has been bizarre, hasn't it? Like, he's kind of been up and down and then down and now back up again at a good time. And I think he's a guy that can really help a team, again, when used appropriately. But I think it's his best opportunity to cash in. So honestly, if I was his agent, I'd recommend that he at least entertain offers. You can always go back to Dallas and take their deal if they say, look, there's nothing more that we can do. If he really wants to stay there, but at least see what the market bears. And if they blow you out of the water, then you get to make your decision based on that information.
Dave McCarthy from SiriusXM. Yeah, no, it's true. It's like I look at Adam Larson, and Edmonton's made offers. They would like him here. But he has that temptation just to see, and maybe he won't. Maybe he's just going to wait it out. But, you know, right now I think the owners are concerned that he might test the market. And once a player tests the market, you don't know what happens, right? Like, Steven Stamkos went right down to the wire. He signed with Tampa Bay on June 29th, right? Mm-hmm. And that was during the courting period, right? There's no courting period now, so it'll be interesting. I'm kind of fascinated to see how many pending UFAs actually make it to market and how many of them sign between the 22nd and the 27th.
Yeah, it's interesting because when you hear the way some of the contracts get played out in the negotiation process, like if you have a good relationship with Jim Neal in Dallas, if you're Jamie Oleksiak, let's presume Oleksiak's camp does. If you're Jim Neal, you cannot fault the guy for wanting to see what his options are. Like I said, at the time in his career where he probably will never have a better bargaining position than he does right now. But also, if you have that good relationship, there's got to be a trust factor there and say, hey, look, if you go out and you test the offers and you see what there is to be had, come back to me and talk before you sign. And if we can make something happen, we will. Like, that's where a gentleman's agreement is the right word, but a respect factor where no one's begrudging either side. It's a business at the end of the day. Hey, the team is very quickly willing to turn it into a business on the player, as Minnesota showed today with Parise and Suter, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's within the context of the rules. That's okay. So it's also not unfair for the player to say to the team, hey, look, it's a business. I'd like to stay here, but man, if there's another team that's out there that's willing to offer me, you know, say $1.5 million, $2 million a year more over the course of say 3 or 4 years, for a guy like Oleksiak, that's a lot of money, right? And there may be, you never know, and you don't know unless you look. For a guy like Ovechkin, Landeskog, it's different. I mean, Ovechkin's got 100 sheets in the bank. It doesn't matter to him anymore. Landeskog, you know, a similar type of situation. It's not going to be about the money for him. He's made a lot of money. But for Jamie Oleksiak, he's not in that same economic class. And in that case, I wouldn't begrudge the guy to have a look.
Let's go for a peek, maybe, Dave. Let's go out for a peek.
Just go for a peek, like strutting, yeah.
Davey, have a good one, man. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay, Jason. See you, buddy.